চৈতন্য দয়ার কথা করহ বিচার বিচার করিলে চিত্তে পাবে চমৎকার। দিস ইজ ফ্রম শ্রী চৈতন্য চরিতামৃতা। ইট মিনস দ্যাট, ওয়েল, ইটস অ্যান ইনজাংশন, ইট মিনস দ্যাট ইউ জাস্ট স্টাডি, ইউ মেক বিচার, ইউ কনসিডার অবাউট দি মার্সি অফ চৈতন্য মহাপ্রভু। ইফ ইউ ডু সো, ইউ উইল বি অ্যাস্টনিশড। So speaking to the youth here, there are some non-youth here also, but especially speaking to the youth, you're coming here regularly and studying the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why you're coming here. You do kirtan, you take prasadam, but I understand that many of you are also very seriously studying the philosophy of Krishna consciousness as given by Srila Prabhupada, which is quite unusual for young people to study philosophy or to take interest in anything beyond studies and sense gratification. Studies is also an extension of sense gratification. It's also meant, it's the idea is work now, enjoy later. But the only problem is the later is always later. It never becomes now. So that you're studying this philosophy of transcendence is quite remarkable. You may have various doubts about that, because what Srila Prabhupada gives in his teachings goes against pretty much everything that you can pick up from the world around you. The whole thrust of materialistic life is just like that. Work now, enjoy later, and squeeze in as much enjoyment as you can in between working like an ass, and this is life. But we get information from Srila Prabhupada that real life is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. In the material world, everything is temporary. Do they teach you that in the school? No, I don't think so. Most important thing, everything here is temporary, everything here is misleading, and nothing is the source of actual happiness. But we desire Satchidananda, an eternal position full of bliss and knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada is given that. He is an agent in doing so. He doesn't claim, like so many bogus gurus do, to be himself the prime dispenser of Satchidananda. He's an agent, a medium, by which the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes through. So Krishnadas Kaviraj, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, says that if you study philosophically what is the nature of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we will be amazed, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the highest gift to the most unqualified people. What is that highest gift? We need to study to understand. We may not understand what is the best thing for us. Actually, this not understanding what is best for us is the cause of all our problems. Generally, to the youth, it is taught, directly or indirectly, that the best thing for you is to study and get a job. But who are you? That is the first question that should be asked. It's just presumed that we are the body. When people meet us, they say to us, "How are you?" My usual reply to that is, "Who am I?" That is a more important question. How are you? Who are you? We presume that we are the body. The body is temporary. I am not temporary. From your studies at schools, you can surmise that I am chemicals. If I am the body, then I am. But I am not chemicals. I am more than chemicals. I am not an amalgamation of hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, and so on. I am more than chemicals. I am an eternal spirit soul. So what is best for me? What is best for me is not necessarily what's best for the body, because I'm not the body. I am eternal spiritual being. I desire to be eternally happy. But there's no such information in all the schools. There are so many prestigious universities: Oxford University, Cambridge, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Sorbonne, all full of highly educated fools, because they don't even ask the most basic question: who am I? They just presume I am the body. Srila Prabhupada always taught the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, beginning as Krishna himself begins in Bhagavad Gita, teaching us that we are not the body. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings build on that. We're not the body, we are eternal soul, Satchit Ananda, full of bliss and knowledge. So that full bliss and full knowledge is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this can be understood by philosophical understanding. In material illusory life, we presume we are the body. That is wrong. It may seem counterintuitive that we're not the body, because it seems like we're the body. When the body is tired, we say, I am tired. When the body feels hungry, we say, I am hungry. But it's not actually me, because I am not the body. So Srila Prabhupada gave us this perfect philosophy. I hope that by your studies of this philosophy, you are coming to understand that this is a perfect understanding. It's complete knowledge, which we won't get anywhere else, either in school or university, or even different religions. Mostly all the different religious processes, they have some very strange ideas or incomplete ideas. This is not exactly Hinduism, as it might be presumed that this is some kind of Hinduism. But rather, this is complete, Krishna consciousness is complete education. Perfect philosophy means it's right. Perfect arithmetic is what? 2 + 2 = 4. Right? Perfect. Why is it perfect? Is it a matter of opinion? Whether it's perfect? Perfection is because it's right. And you can, by algebraic tomfoolery, you can come to the conclusion that 1 = 0. It happened to all of us in mathematics class, our teacher. Did you ever get that done to you by your teacher? Made some big equation, cancelled everything out, and came to the conclusion that 1 = 0. And all of us, the students, we were looking, we couldn't understand. But then he went back and found that one bracket, I can't remember how it goes, one bracket with a x squared plus 2x3 divided by xy to the power of minus 3 times, anyway, whatever it was, the whole bracket came to 0. And so when you multiplied something else by that, it looked like you were doing a legitimate algebraic formulation, but actually it was cheating. So by cheating you can come out that 1 = 0, and although it may look like a very sophisticated mathematical formulation, actually it's wrong. So Srila Prabhupada gave us the perfect philosophy. The perfect philosophy should not only be theoretical, should be practical also. And the practical manifestation of the perfect philosophy is that Srila Prabhupada gave us the perfect practice also, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. Srila Prabhupada conveyed that to us. There are many, well, first of all, let's go back to the philosophy. What is the perfect practice? We'll have to understand according to the perfect philosophy. The perfect philosophy is that we are all eternal spiritual beings. We are suffering in this material world due to forgetfulness of Krishna. If we revive our dormant love for Krishna, then we get out of this horrible cycle of birth and death and go to Krishna. So that's the, in summary, the perfect philosophy. The perfect practice is that practice which revives our dormant Krishna consciousness. And there are various processes for doing that, which are meant for the purification. Purification means to become free from illusion, to become free from kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, to become free from material attachments and illusions. So that is possible by philosophically understanding and also by purification of heart. Actually, this philosophy, it cannot be understood simply academically. One actually has to practice it. Raja vidya raja guhyam pavitram idam uttamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam. This knowledge is the king of knowledge, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and it can be actually perceived by practice. The perfection of philosophical understanding is that we actually practice it, and naturally we become happy. If we have a spiritual process and by following it we become miserable, then that's not spiritual, because spiritual is the opposite of material, and material means temporary and miserable. And spiritual means eternal and blissful. And with knowledge, clear knowledge. Material means illusory also. So the perfect practice is that which cleanses the heart of all impurities and revives our dormant love for Krishna. So that process is the process given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Based on hearing and chanting about Krishna in the association of devotees. And practically we see that this practice is very powerful, because even in this most fallen age of Kali, in which being sinful is considered normal and respectable, many people are understanding what is sinful life and becoming free from it and becoming devotees of Krishna, pure devotees of Krishna. So this is the perfect practice. Srila Prabhupada gave us the perfect philosophy. On the basis of that, the perfect practice, hearing and chanting about Krishna, doing everything for Krishna, dedicating our life to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada also gave us the perfect lifestyle, or how to live our life in a manner that we can best practice Krishna consciousness. Because although Krishna consciousness can be practiced in any condition, there are certain conditions which are more favorable for practicing Krishna consciousness. For instance, it is better to live in a society of devotees, living peacefully, chanting Hare Krishna together. That is more favorable for practicing Krishna consciousness than if we live in a society of meat eaters and drunkards who have no interest in Krishna consciousness. So there are certain factors which help us to advance in Krishna consciousness, of which one I just mentioned that's most important: living in the association of devotees. To practice Krishna consciousness, it requires quite some practice. the standard daily sadhana that Srila Prabhupada gave for all his disciples was at least 6 hours every day of only sadhana. That means approximately 4:30 to 8:30 in the morning, and in the evening 2 hours also. That was the standard sadhana. Nowadays, most devotees coming to the Krishna conscious movement, they don't do that much sadhana due to circumstances. That means that most of them are caught in the rat race, working long hours, caught up in earning a living. And for many devotees, even though their desire is to practice Krishna consciousness, they're not able to do so to the even the minimal standard, to the desired standard, and therefore we find many devotees, there's 16 rounds and that's it. That's their daily sadhana. And 16 rounds may also be while driving a car, or which isn't optimal. So Srila Prabhupada also gave us the perfect lifestyle. You may not be aware, but actually, well, that's why I'm saying, to make you aware if you're not aware, and to remind you if you are aware, that Srila Prabhupada very strongly advocated establishing rural communities in which devotees can live peacefully, very simply, produce their own food by the grace of Krishna. And in this way, devotees can all live together, householder devotees, married devotees, raise their children in a society of devotees, and in this way avoid bad association, have good association, and live in a manner that they actually have time to practice Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if we're just working, then not only does our consciousness become polluted by association with non-devotees and by the pressures of modern life to work, to produce, to be productive, to earn the money which you're being paid. The employer is never satisfied. The employee never does enough. Living with devotees, producing our own food, living very simply. And then everyone comes together daily for hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this was Srila Prabhupada's plan. He gave us the perfect philosophy, he gave us the perfect practice, and he also gave us the perfect lifestyle to prosecute that. Now, in the last few years before Srila Prabhupada left this world, or physically left this world, he emphasized a lot on this, that we have to establish this, and he gave plans. He had the devotees buy plots of land for establishing farm communities, and just before he left this world, he said, "Now I want to show you how to live on the land. Just stay in one place and live on the land." Unfortunately, Krishna called Srila Prabhupada back to him, but still that mandate is there, that we should establish these communities. And all of you, you may consider this, that your life ahead is ahead of you. Of course, there's no guarantee of that. Your life may be almost finished. Actually, all of our life is almost finished, because Prayanal Payusha Sabya Kalava Smin Yuga Janaha. In Kali Yuga, people have short lives. And even if you have a long life, still in eternity, nothing is long. But anyway, generally in youth, there are thoughts of, well, what should I do in future? What should you do in future? Well, if you are actually considering what is Krishna consciousness, if we've actually understood what is Krishna consciousness, then our first aim of life, or actually our only aim of life, should be to be Krishna conscious. Because nothing else has any meaning, actually. It really doesn't matter whether you're the richest person in the world, or all these things have no ultimate meaning. It may seem to be very important, but it's not. And yeah, there are so many rich people. Anyway, it's maybe more comfortable than being poor, but the poor people have their anxiety and the rich people have a different set of anxieties, that's all. They're just suffering in a different way, that's all. So this idea how to spend my life, maybe you're not that ambitious, you're just thinking, well, no need to be rich, but at least have to make a living, this, that, and the other. But to date this simple living and high thinking, establishing varnashram that Srila Prabhupada wanted, that hasn't been established. So you might consider that there's a great service opportunity in Srila Prabhupada's mission to help to establish this. And for your own sake also. I mean, even the, apart from devotees, in America now there's a whole trend, it's not a massive trend, but it's noticeable enough to have been noticed, that there are quite a few people who are young couples who have done all their education, they're all set up to have a great career and all this kind of thing, and they're just leaving the cities and going to the land to grow their own food and live simply because they think it's a better way of life, even without the spiritual part. Why be crammed into some city fully stressed out with all pollution and competitive spirit, no security? You have to put locks and double locks and alarms on your door. And even then, when you walk out, you can be mugged. So even without any spiritual knowledge, many people are thinking this is a better way of life. And with Krishna consciousness, it's a winner all around, because materially we can live more peacefully, and spiritually, Krishna consciousness is spiritual life. There's really nothing else apart from that. So that is something you can consider. It's actually a great preaching opportunity, because it might not seem like preaching. It might seem like running away from the preachings in the cities where all the people are, and we should go to the cities. But so many people are frustrated living. I mean, everyone's frustrated living in the cities, and those who are more intelligent, they are aware that they're frustrated. Most people are not even, they don't have the time maybe, or their consciousness is so agitated by the fast life in the city, by the agitated, stressful life in the city, that they never stop to think that, actually, what am I doing? What's going on with my life? It's just, I'm just like a tennis ball being, just being smashed back and forward. People don't think. Those who do think will be able to appreciate if they see that here are some people who have cool-headedly and intelligently made the decision to live their life in a different way, because they have different values to those that the materialistic society constantly inculcates in us. We don't accept. You know. Work hard, get money. No, we don't accept that. We're going to live on the land by depending on Krishna's mercy, protecting the cows. We have very high spiritual philosophy. People will notice. So it's a great preaching opportunity. We may wonder that, well, if this is the great, it's the best philosophy. Actually, you can study, if you want to spend a few lifetimes, you can study all the philosophies in the world. You can't do it in one lifetime. but you won't find anything. You won't find a better philosophy than this. the highest truth. As stated in the beginning of Bhagavatam, the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. That is in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada's exposition of Srimad Bhagavatam is astonishing. He begins the preface by the concept of God and the concept of the absolute truth are not on the same level. Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the concept of the absolute truth. You may think, well, so Bhagavatam is about God, but Prabhupada says, no, first we have to consider what is the absolute truth. The absolute truth is that person who's known as God, but is approached through Vedanta from the platform of Brahmagyan. Actually, this is very philosophical. I don't know if you can follow all the strands here. Anyway, the point is that this is the highest philosophy. This is reality. Reality is not eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. Reality is to understand, I am an eternal servant of Krishna. My real benefit is in accepting that I am a servant of Krishna and acting accordingly. And we should do whatever is required so that in this life I can be free from all illusion and go to Krishna. This should be our life's motto. Whether you're an engineer or a doctor or a pilot or a bank clerk or whatever, that is secondary. That's not so important. The main thing is we have to live and act in such a way that we become Krishna conscious. So Srila Prabhupada gave us the perfect philosophy, the perfect practice, and the perfect lifestyle so that we can practice, because in modern life we can't practice very well, actually. The intensity of Krishna consciousness that we require demands that we have sufficient time every day to hear and chant about Krishna. So this is a possibility for all of you to channel your life in such a way that you can be Krishna conscious fully without having to divert your attention to living and acting most of the time like a materialist, which if you're doing a job, that's what you have to do. You have to live and act and talk like a materialist. If you go for a job as a computer engineer or whatever, you have to be a computer engineer. You can't say, well, now I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. Today is Ekadashi, so I'm going to chant 64 rounds. And the job is there. You can't do it. But if we choose to live our lives in such a... Well, that's the point. We should choose to live our lives in such a way that we, as Srila Prabhupada states, we cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day. So that's a proposition for all of you to think about. If you are enlivened by this perfect philosophy and the possibility to practice in such a way that we can achieve perfection in this very life, if by understanding this perfect philosophy you've understood that nothing in this world is of any value, only Krishna consciousness is of any real intrinsic value, then we should consider how to best lead our lives in such a way that we ourselves can be fully Krishna conscious and not divert our attention into this nonsensical materialistic way of life, and how we can help others also to come to Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Any questions, please? Yeah. What are the difficulties that our society... Why has it been so slow? That's a big story. Then we have to... Why is our movement practically not interested in Varnashram? It's a big story. Then we have to get into the whole history of ISKCON. There was a, shortly after Prabhupada left this world, there was a major deviation and things got off course there, and some things got back onto course, but not everything. But the, anyway, the, that it hasn't been done doesn't mean that it shouldn't be done. Definitely there will be many difficulties in doing so. The first difficulty is to convince our devotees to do this, because our devotees, they mostly seem to have more faith in modern society than in Srila Prabhupada's order. They think, well, if I have to live, I have to have a job. But actually, to live, we need food, clothing, and shelter. And by Krishna's grace, food, clothing, and shelter can all be produced locally, personally. You can build your own house, you can produce your own clothing, grow your own food. So, it takes some faith, and it seems that mostly devotees don't have that faith. They're so conditioned by, they think the food comes from the supermarket. They don't know that food comes from the earth. There's a story like that. True story. One woman in England was growing vegetables in the garden. And she had her 5-year-old daughter, and the 5-year-old daughter's friend from school was visiting. So they went in the garden and she pulled up some carrots from the ground. And when they come out of the ground, it's not like when you buy them in the supermarket. There's all mud on it. And the friend of the daughter looked at the carrots with disgust, seeing all the mud on it, and said, well, my mother gets carrots from Tesco. Tesco is the name of a supermarket chain. Do you have that here, Tesco? No. So her idea is that, what is this carrot with dirt on it? We get nice, clean carrots. She probably didn't know that carrots come out of the earth. She thinks that they come in a plastic bag in the supermarket. And we'll see, it's quite common in the Western countries that you'll find in some places fruit growing wild. People will go past it, they'll drive past it, and they'll go to the shop and buy some. They're afraid. That happened to me in America, actually, one time. I was visiting a devotee's house, and I saw outside in the field, there's all this kind of, what in Bengal is called shak, one kind of shak was growing, Brahmi shak. So I went outside, and I picked it, and his wife was cooking. I said, you can cook it. He said, how to cook it, this is how you cook it. And the devotee, he was very afraid to take it. He said, you know what it is. Oh, I knew what it was. It's one kind of shak, Brahmi shak, very good for the brain. But he was afraid to take it. Oh, I don't know what it is. They think that unless it comes from a shop and it's sprayed with 20 types of poison, then it's not safe. So why hasn't it happened? If we take, I mean, there may be many reasons, but we haven't taken it up seriously. There have been problems, but then we shouldn't give it up because there are problems. We should try again. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent some of his disciples to preach in the West. It didn't work out. And then all the others thought, well, we tried and it didn't work. So it can't work. But Prabhupada showed that it can work. He went through so... It wasn't that he went to the West and everyone greeted... There was no brass band waiting for him when he arrived in America. It wasn't that the President of the United States came down and bowed down at his lotus feet. He had to struggle with so much difficulty, but he persevered with faith in the order of his Guru. So we should persevere and not be distracted by apparent failures. We should go on and Krishna will help. Are there any other questions about the topic? No, you're hearing a lot about Mars because India has sent some space vehicle to Mars. Never mind that thousands of people, millions of people in India are undernourished, but they're going to bring some mushrooms from Mars. And then the people can eat mushrooms. So, yeah, how does that fit with Vedic cosmology? Is that the question? To tell you the truth, I don't know, because I haven't studied Vedic cosmology or even non-Vedic cosmology. It appears to be quite a complex topic. Srila Prabhupada was very doubtful about the so-called moon trip. In, I believe it was supposed to be 1969, they first landed on the moon, one small step for man, one great step for mankind, and all this kind of thing. He was very doubtful that they could have gone to the moon because, according to Vedic descriptions, the moon is further away than the sun, which certainly doesn't fit with modern astronomical observations. And that you can't go by mechanical means. One has to be allowed to enter. One has to have sufficient punya, pious merit to go there. There are many people. I believe the last survey that was done, more than 50% of the population in America don't believe that they actually went to the moon. For various reasons. If you want to find out, well, you can look on the internet why they don't believe it. There are various reasons. For instance, just to give one example, the footage of the moonshot shows that this, what was his name? Aldrin, Buzz Aldrin. Who was the first one? Neil Armstrong. So he was supposed to have got out of the moon capsule in his spacesuit, which makes the body two or three times bigger, and jumped out and gone down onto the moon's surface. But if you look at that module or whatever it's called, which is in the NASA Museum in Houston, then the door to get out or in or out of that space, that moon bug, whatever it's called, it's too small to get out if you're wearing that spacesuit. Well, that's a problem, isn't it? And there are many, many things. There are many points. If you consider this having a rocket blast, what is that? The rocket blasting up, it's the technology is that of fireworks, actually. It's the rocket which blasts up, it's this, it works on the same principle as rockets in fireworks. Now, considering that in your laptop, the technology that we have nowadays is more sophisticated than any computer technology they had in 1969, that they can get this very gross system of propulsion just by lighting a fire and having an explosion, and that they can get exactly on orbit to go to the moon. Because if you are, say, 1/1000th of a degree out, if you're not exactly on course, then by the time you get to the moon, you won't get to the moon. It has to be so perfect. So there are many reasons to doubt that they went to the moon, and many people do also. doubt that they went to the moon. So now they say they're going to Mars. What's going on? I don't know, but I doubt it also. There's so many things to say about this. One devotee told me that he was invited to some conference where they had the first space, they had this space station, and they had people, they'd put the space station and it was orbiting, and they were in bliss. They had a conference to discuss it and how they put the space station the first time it was orbiting the Earth, and they were in great bliss. And he was thinking, well, why are they so joyous about this when they've already supposed to have gone to the moon, which is a much greater achievement? Whereas the space station, it's only like a few kilometers up in the sky. It's about not more than 100 kilometers up in the sky. So why are they making a big celebration when they're already supposed to have gone to the moon? And if they're supposed to have gone to the moon, why did they stop going to the moon? Why are they going to Mars? Why do they say they're going to Mars instead? Venus is supposed to be closer, isn't it? Is it? Mars, sign of life. Mars is similar to the Earth. Why did they stop going to the moon? There's probably lots of oil there. If they could build a pipeline, then they could stop bombing Iraq. They could build a pipeline from the moon down to Earth. There must be, according to their theory, the moon is a chunk that fell off the Earth. So there must be gold up there. There must be oil. I don't know. Something's fishy up there. Exactly what's going on, I don't know. But I don't believe them. It's just one sign where they're looking for signs of intelligence in space. We can also look for signs of intelligence on Earth. One sign of intelligence is that you don't believe what's in the newspapers. Just like, for instance, why is America and other countries so eager to bomb Iraq? That's big news at the moment, right? I mean, they've been doing it for more than 20 years now, on and off. But are they actually going to stop? They say because of a threat of terrorism. Is that going to stop terrorism in America by bombing Iraq? It would seem that would increase the threat of terrorism, wouldn't it? So what are they actually doing? What's going on? Well, it's obvious that they're very interested in this area in particular because of oil. They don't take particular interest in other parts of the world, whatever's going on, unless there's oil there. So, yeah, you don't know what these demons are doing. That's another area, actually. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish this Bhaktivedanta Institute to show that the knowledge in the Vedas and Puranas, that is perfect. And whatever speculative knowledge we have, that is imperfect. So, Vedic cosmology, we accept axiomatically that's perfect, but that has to be demonstrated, actually. So that requires scientific investigation to do so. Okay, I'll take one more question, then I should go, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, urbanization is going on in India, full scale. It's already fully complete several generations ago. in the Western world, the urbanization is a fait accompli. It's a an accomplished fact. Yeah.
So the city seems to be a bigger role model than the village.
People are attracted to the cities because they're attracted by. Well, one thing is the Indian government policies are emptying the villages. That's another demoniac thing. They promoted all this Monsanto and all this and genetically modified crops, and the fact that literally thousands of farmers are committing suicide and leaving their land, that should be a major political issue in India. Rape is a major issue, but it affects, it's not good, but it affects a much smaller number than the farmers. And then you find in so many cases, the big companies, they're allocated land by the government, state governments, and they throw people off their land and force them to leave their land. So, the government is actually waging a war. They're talking about the Naxalites waging a war, but one reason they're waging a war is because the government is practically waging a war against the farmers. So that's one factor, and they have no choice but to come to the city because they can't survive on the land. And they're attracted, they work in the factory, get some money, and the idea is there, you get more sense gratification. But the people who move from the village to the city, they live a very miserable life in some slum with one toilet shared by 50 families or something like this. It's a very horrible situation. This idea of progress, progress and prosperity, that's not for everyone. The prosperity of the world is achieved by the exploitation of the many by the few. In India, there's middle class. You're all part of the middle class, but there's a much bigger population of very poor people who the middle class are able to live economically fairly comfortably because there are, for instance, construction is done by laborers who they're paid next to nothing. They live on one building site after another. It's all by exploitation. So this, again, these farm projects, we welcome everyone. Come and live with us. Live simply and chant Hare Krishna. People are drinking tea. They think tea, very nice. But the tea is produced by exploitation. Practically slave labor. Tea, coffee, chocolate. All these things are produced by exploitation of people who are easily exploitable. There are so many disparities in the world. Meat is produced by exploitation of animals. They're tortured and killed. It's a bigger role. You say the city life, urban life, is a bigger role model. What do you mean exactly than that, by a role model? People want to come to the cities rather than going to the village, and we're saying the opposite, yeah.
So, as a part of preaching, as you mentioned in the lecture, shouldn't preaching in philosophy be targeted more towards the larger...
We should preach in the cities, but like I said, we have the perfect philosophy, we have the perfect practice, but we have to demonstrate it also in the perfect lifestyle. Because city life means it's... you're saying role model, but the template is actually demoniac. Just work hard to get money for sense gratification. So you want to demonstrate the perfect philosophy and the perfect practice by the perfect lifestyle and show people you don't have to live like this. I'm not saying we should stop preaching in the cities, but But we have to demonstrate also how Krishna consciousness gives a real alternative to the demoniac way of life. City life, it's based on the demoniac principle of exploit nature, exploit people, exploit animals, and enjoy your senses. That's modern city life. The whole basis is a demoniac outlook. So yes, preaching in the city should be there, but we shouldn't, in the name of that, abandon Srila Prabhupada's Varnashram farm projects. And practically we may preach, but it may not be that impressive to people if they see that someone, they're working hard and they're preaching to us to be Krishna conscious, but what does that mean? They can't do the sadhana to the minimum level that Prabhupada gave. And we find people I see here in Dubai that people have been initiated for like 20 years and they still haven't read even half of Prabhupada's books, which is one of the first things you're supposed to do. They're preaching, but the knowledge is not that much actually, because they've never studied very deeply. So it all becomes quite light. They don't go very deep. You can't deeply understand their philosophy or practice in a very concentrated way. It's a much bigger statement if someone, they have all the facilities of city life and they say, okay, finished, I don't want that. I'm going to make my own decision and live life not according to the dictates of these exploitive demons, but according to the way that Prabhupada wanted us to. So that's a big statement in itself, isn't it? Then in the cities we should preach. Hey, look, these are what these people are doing. It's not that we expect everyone to do that, but at least the example is there. That Krishna consciousness is so important that we're prepared to cut out of this exploitive, sense gratificatory society. Hare Krishna. I have to go now to Alcoz to speak among people, the kind of people I was talking about, who they have to work very hard and are paid not very much, so that the privileged few like yourselves can live more comfortably. But they're taking up Krishna consciousness. Some of them are taking up Krishna consciousness very seriously. Hare Krishna.